Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Dan Gibbons from the City Club of Chicago. Thank you for being here today. Thank you especially to our sponsors who allow us to have these great conversations. And Clayco, of course, a great supporter of City Club, is here. Michael Fosnock, Emily Boyle, Sarah, your whole team, we always appreciate that support and all that you all do for Chicago. The School of the Art Institute of Chicago is here. Thank you, ladies, for all that you're doing. Also, Taft, Stellantis, and Hollister is here right in the middle there. Thank you. We are graced by so many amazing leaders. Alderman Samantha Nugent is here. Alderman Nugent. Inspector General Deb Witzberg. Commissioner Chris Brown is on his way, right? On his way. Okay. Former First Lady Amy Eshelman. Thank you, Amy. Always a great supporter of what we're doing here. Library Foundation head Brenda Bowie is here. They're doing so many amazing things with the library. A lot of folks are quite familiar with those. And we'll have to have you all back soon to hear more about that, right? And we have the former Commissioner of DCase also. Michelle Boone is here. And you know how much she's at the Poetry Foundation now, but how much she has had to do with what we're going to talk about today and all things cultural in Chicago. Jack Gutman is here. Jack was really instrumental in getting this biennial off the ground a few years ago. Thank you for that. Along with Lynn Lockwood and so many of you who are in the room, this was, I know, a big effort to get this going in Chicago a number of years ago, and now it's exciting to hear about the success, where it's come and where it's going. So looking forward to hearing more about that. Former Senate President John Cullerton is also here with us. So thank you all. Thank you for taking the time to be here today. There is just so much going on. It is September 11th. 24 years ago to this morning, most of you remember where you were. It's hard to believe it was 24 years ago. It seems like yesterday, but for so many weren't even alive yet. Young students, others that weren't even alive. It's now almost a quarter century ago, but we will never, ever forget. And we'll continue to honor those who were killed on September 11th, especially the first responders, and also the families, you know, the survivors, those who survived, and the families of those who didn't. They live with those memories every day, and we just like to acknowledge them on this day and hopefully more often than that. And as we remember those thousands who lost their lives, I think it's important to also reflect on the thousands who are affected by violence, and especially gun violence, day in and day out in our own cities, and condemn the political violence. I mean, the horrible assassination yesterday of Charlie Kirk, Chicagoland native. He died having a conversation about political differences, having a civil discourse. Something that we take very seriously here at City Club. It's what we pride ourselves on, having that discourse. Some days you can't help but wonder, did those terrorists win? Are they winning, you know, by turning Americans against each other and turning their guns and political differences against each other and that hatred? But it is not the case. There is some of that. But that is certainly not the case. It's not the case here in Chicago, where we are as resilient as ever. It's absolutely not the case here at City Club, where we are fully committed to having these civil discourse, these conversations, convening leaders like all of you to move the city forward and to help do our little bit to help move society forward. And also really encourage the next generation of civic leaders to continue to step up. So I really mean that as we remember all of these folks and try to lift up all the good. There's so much good in this world. There's so much good in this city. And every one of you is doing your part to make that better, to acknowledge that, to lift that up. And as you'll hear today, every one of you are doing your part. We're committed to doing that here at City Club, and doing it in the honor of all those folks that we've lost, and do it for the future generations of those who are going to lead. So thank you for being here. I really mean that. Thank you for being part of these important conversations. Thank you for supporting City Club and that mission, and for doing your part. It's very meaningful. So today, three of those incredible civic leaders are here with us to have a great conversation about so much good that comes out of Chicago. And you remember also the good that starts here and is spread around the world. And it's going to be really interesting to hear about this biennial and what it showcasing what great stuff is happening here in Chicago. So I'd like to turn this over to a moderator that Lee Bay that's going to join us and invite both the panelists up right now. If you could join us, and I'll make brief introductions. Lee Bay is he's a former public servant. I worked with Lee in the mayor's office. He's also an artist, an author, a real Renaissance man. He's currently the architecture critic for the Chicago Sun-Times and ABC News Chicago. He's going to guide our conversation today, which will also include Florencia Rodriguez, who is the artistic director of the 2025 Chicago Architectural Biennial, and Mark Sexton, the co-managing partner of Kruick Sexton Partners, and the Chicago, the Architectural Biennial Board member. Thank you for taking your time. Thank you for allowing me those few words. And please have it. We're gonna go till about 1:10. If you have any questions, we'd like to get the audience involved in the conversation. So please think of those questions, and we'll come around a little bit later. Thank you, Lee, for taking it from here.
My pleasure. Good afternoon, everyone. I have to get back into work mode. I'm off this week and next week, so I got to get the brain together. So please forgive. Great to be here in this panel. I'm just going to jump right in with the questions. 10 years it's been since the start of this, and if you haven't been a part of it, you've certainly watched it. Florencia, I want to begin with you. What do you think are the lessons learned about putting on the biennial, what to show, how to do it, and what will we see this year that you think will be exciting?
Well, thank you for the question. And there's going to be so many exciting things, but I want to do a little bit of history because, the 10th year anniversary, and I want to contextualize that when the first biennial started, I was living in Buenos Aires in Argentina and really paying attention to what was happening here. Of course, the world was looking at what's like Chicago doing, the first like this big exhibition on architecture in the Americas that really felt that was needed to host discussion, to host conversations that were going on and to showcase some production. So at that moment, I was directing a publication there, Plot. And again, it was not only me as press, but the people engaged in the field and in debates in the field looking at what was going on in Chicago. And I think that was a big inspiration. I came to Chicago for the first time visiting that biennial. And I ended up living here, working at UIC, and being part of this cultural community that is so strong and so determined to move ideas forward. So there's a lot learned in the process of this biennial. And I really appreciate being part of this 10th year anniversary. I always say it's like the coming of age of the biennial, and I am part with the amazing group of people in the world that are leading the biennial in terms of what the biennial should be, who are we talking to, what is the future of this kind of civic institution that is kind of putting people together, showing Chicago to the world and bringing the world to Chicago. So yes, in terms of the lessons personally, it's like always looking at all of that production with humbleness, understanding that there are different contexts, idiosyncrasies, ways to relate into the built environment and generate a platform that can be kind of potentially a space in which yeah, we can descend, we can learn from each other and bring all those things together is an amazing thing. So yeah, there's going to be plenty of exciting things from the exhibitions, from the claims of there were images there of beauty for all and what it does mean politically, up to kind of beautiful performances with harp winds or dancers with blobs that are showing that architecture is for everyone, that we are in this environment that is made, yes, by bricks, woods, and all of that, but also air, humidity, and so many other things.
Now, Mark, I'm going to get you in a second. I want to ask about the theme, though, the title, Shift.
Yes.
What does it mean, and what should people know about that?
Yeah, the title, for sure, I think we all feel that things are changing like in an abrupt rhythm and that we need to readapt all the time. And that shift is something that is in the air. And I really wanted a title that would reflect a very broad theme and that then we can kind of organize like smaller, more discrete narratives to discuss very specific things. So I did like that duality in between the huge umbrella or a bigger platform and more specificity. And again, I think Shift talks to everyone because of that situation. We can talk about the biggest changes of our time and climate change and the challenges with the housing crisis, but also kind of we all have kind of these small TVs in our pockets and we are adapting to technology and we are talking to people from different locations and we all went through the pandemic globally and changed the ways in which we kind of perceive our spaces. So that idea of the transformations, which is for sure not the first time in history, and that's why times with an S of radical change, but that for sure position us in terms of the kind of what is the weight of the relevance of the decisions that we make in our everyday lives. And I hope that that's there. Yeah.
And Mark, why is this biennial important and why is it important that it happens in Chicago?
Great question. I think it's important because it's really a view from outside Chicago by, in this case, up to 100 projects about sort of defining problems that other societies, other locations have that are remarkably some of our problems. And I think there's questions about, you know, whether there's real solutions, but I think really asking the question is probably the most important in pondering what the issues are. I think why Chicago? Again, Chicago is the third city, maybe the given New York and L.A.
They're so first in our hearts.
First in our hearts.
First in our hearts.
I think everyone in this room, but we know that New York is certainly influenced by everything east of it. L.A. is influenced by so much of the west of it. But I think Chicago is really a true American city. And why Chicago? Well, Chicago has always been a capital of innovation in architecture and enlightenment. You know, it started with, and it's debatable, this is New York always likes to debate, that they had the first high-rise steel structure. No, we had it, Home Life Insurance by LeBaron Jenning in 1885. And that was really, an amazing sort of discovery or development. But then you start looking right after the Second World War at a time when commerce was really big, the Inland Steel Building came in, I think, 58. It was the first really free-span, sort of very flexible. They were predicting the future, very flexible office space. And then shortly thereafter, in 62 or so, Mies van der Rohe does his 860-880 revolutionary way of building. I mean, I heard stories that people would crowd around and watch it being erected because it was steel, literally steel and glass. It was the first one like that. And then you look just right after that, Bertram Goldberg with Marina City, sort of the connection of program of entertainment, residences, and actually even Marina right in the middle of the city. I mean, it was a breathtaking accomplishment. And then finally in that area, the first, what I think is the first and maybe one of the best in the world mixed-use developments, which is the Hancock Building, which, you know, the rest of the world was looking to Chicago for ideas and for inspiration. And I think so it being in Chicago, given our history and given our the relevance that we have and the importance that actually all of us place to architecture, I think is really important. And this hopefully will remain an area of inspiration and innovation and development. And things like the biennial really reinforce that.
And it's amazing how Chicagoans take architecture to heart, all Chicagoans. I mean, just briefly, the Sun-Times asked me and Neil Steinberg, a fellow columnist, to do a boat tour, architectural boat tour of the river. And I thought, no, there's already the CAC that does a better job than I could ever do, and no one's going to come to this thing. It turns out we sold out the tour twice. Once we did it, and then it made us do it again, which is not a testament to my abilities as a docent or Neil's, but more to the desire in this city to know about and to embrace architecture.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess the same Buenos Aires. I very much so. What have you learned about? What have you seen about Chicagoans and their love of architecture here, and how that plays into the potential strengths and what you may show in the biennial?
Yes. Well, that link in between Buenos Aires and Chicago, there is something very obvious, that is the grid and kind of the flatness of the surface. And there have been some researches and things that are really interesting related to the territory and all of that. But also building on what Mark was saying, it's if you're trained in Buenos Aires as an architect, for sure you will study Chicago and the history in the 20th century. Mm-hmm. And we will all feel in our imaginariums, I'm thinking about architecture and the 20th century, about the high-rises or the prairie style or very different things happening here, or American framing, for instance, right? So yeah. So that's already part of the DNA of architecture in that sense, combined with modernism in Latin America, which was for sure such a big pioneer movement that changed the way that spaces were thought of or public spaces were thought of and designed during the 20th century. So that hybridity kind of was very interesting for me, just to approach Chicago architects here, understand the production that is going on these days, and also kind of put in the agenda for this biennial to bring a little bit of the global south here to establish that reciprocity in the conversation.
Mm-hmm. We need to see that, though. We need to see, this is a question, not a statement, I promise, but we do need to see what other cities and other countries are doing here in Chicago. We need to see that.
Yeah, I think I believe in that everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. It's like really, again, when I always say learning from others, maybe that's why I became also a journalist. I'm an architect by training, but I was a journalist and writing about architecture. It's because of curiosity of learning what others are doing and being able to be open to challenging your own ideas about stuff, right? And understanding other ways of, other point of views.
Mark?
Yeah, I think I've just seen a little bit of a glimpse of what's in store for us in now less than 2 weeks is the sort of influence that other architects are imparting in solving their solutions or their problems. And, you know, one that I'm very interested in seeing is there's a group from Dakar, Senegal, I think, in which they're using sort of just mud and reeds and clay and what have you, and creating building blocks. And I think that is, again, we think we're so advanced and we don't need things like that. But ultimately, I think as we start looking as an architect, looking for much more natural and of the place solutions, I think that is an incredible thing. Now, you would say, well, you know, their economy is, you know, very low on labor, and so labor can be anywhere, but or can be quite robust, where ours, labor is the number one thing. But I think actually seeing how that happens and how that might be translated. There was I think it was last biennial or SOM did an example of, through their research, eco blocks, you know, building blocks, which were zero carbon. So I think it's like the material, what we use. I would say the material of an architect is like the paint, you know, of a Picasso or Michelangelo. So the idea of being able to be inspired and say, why can't we do that? And can we make it to scale? I think is really the thing that starts inspiring at least me and I think other architects in the city.
You know, part of the reason for the biennial, at the inception at least, under, three mayors ago, under Rahm Emanuel, was that it could also be a vehicle to help tourism, particularly at a time in Chicago where, as we always need more tourists here, but particularly then, there's a narrative about Chicago that began to take form there and that we still sort of suffer under in many respects. But so talk a little bit about the numbers and the various places that you expect people to come from, and maybe they've come from in the past.
Yeah, well, I'm terrible with numbers, but millions of people are going to be there, and they have visited the biennial, right? I need Eva there with my numbers. But
the average, half a million.
Half a million is the average, exactly.
I'm pretty good with numbers. 2.2 million have actually experienced the first decade of these. These, and so it's not an insignificant. And again, it's just beginning. I always say, if you go back and look at Museum of Modern Art, is real polished and wonderful now. I actually believe 10 years into it, it probably wasn't what it is. And I look at the same thing with the biennial, that it is a growing, it's still a child. As Florencia said, it's now 10. So yes, it's still a child. And with that comes some awkwardness, some things that might be done better. But that's the whole idea, is that by really reaching out across the world and trying to get influences, there can be a spark of understanding and of future then development.
You know, how are you using space this year? The first biennial, it seems like a lot of it was at the Cultural Center, if not all of it, maybe. And then at 1 year, maybe 17 or so, you spread out a little bit. Mm-hmm. What does it look like this year?
Well, the first years was more concentrated in the Chicago Cultural Center, even though there were always events in other places. And then it started spreading. Of course, 2021 was the year in which things were done more outside, and the project of the Available City was distributed and dispersed in the city, bringing things to different neighborhoods. In this case, I think there's a mixture of those. The Chicago Cultural Center is always the center of the biennial, one of the main sites. It's open to the public. It's the meaning of that building for Chicago and for the rest is super interesting. So, of course, we are there in the Michigan Galleries and the Yates Gallery and Exhibit Hall, and the main exhibition is happening there. But we have a very interesting representation in other sites with what we are calling capsule exhibitions. So each of them has an identity and a narrative and some ideas that you can go and enjoy and explore. In the Stony Island at Art Bank, we have one exhibition that is called Melting Solids, Graham Foundation. We have fragmented manifestos looking at certain specific other moments in recent history, radical change in architecture. At the Griffin Museum, there is a fantastic installation, and there are many partner events in different parts of the city, west, south, and it's really part of the mission of the biennial, or the vision to really get, like they're in the fabric of the cultural life in Chicago. And in November, we're having another big opening, a second round with a very nice space in the North Michigan Avenue, 840 North Michigan Avenue, with also kind of points out to other discussions that are going on in Chicago and in other cities of what is the meaning of the downtowns or cities after the pandemic, or that now that the cities are being experienced in different ways. So yes, I think it's part now, and this is part of Shift Biennial, but probably the biennial in general, to be very, very connected to the city, to the other cultural actors, and continue growing on that.
A cultural event on Michigan Avenue. There's a shift for you, right?
Yes.
Because, we all know that it was happening on North Michigan Avenue, and it has to figure out, much like LaSalle Street kind of is now, and I think State Street has always kind of grappled with this, at least most of my life, is what's next? What do we do next? Could this possibly be, into the two of you, you know, another way to sort of look at. I mean, there's also, you know, there's obviously at the Water Tower, there's the David Schwimmer play, Looking Glass. There's Looking Glass, and there's, you know, certainly cultural, certainly, I said you were my mind is, there's certainly cultural events that can, that have the potential of happening and happening a little bit, fits and starts up and down Michigan, but maybe, perhaps, this can kind of lead the way into something else happening. Help me out here. What do you
think? Yeah, I think the history of sort of culture in Chicago and many cities is it's in buildings that have, just because of the building, have some opacity to the public. They have to take an active. What is, I think, thrilling about this and the notion of activating an unused or an unrealized space on Michigan Avenue is it takes the retail view that, hey, let's make it very transparent. Mm-hmm. Let's make it right there. Let's make it open so that you walk past it and you see it, and it's no longer in, I don't want to say the cultural center and the ivory tower, but it's no longer a destination. It could be what I think is so wonderful about any city in the world is that unexpected event that you walk down the street. And that's one of the things that has happened with the pandemic is the streetscape has really started to reduce. And it's not just Chicago. It's across really the world. And all of a sudden to activate it with a cultural event that says come in and engage and you may have a sort of a wonderful time mm-hmm. with this, to me is using the city in a way, using spaces that might be, you know, empty. There's nothing as off-putting as a for lease sign on Michigan Avenue. And so the idea of making it active helps the city and I think really helps the biennial.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and if I can add on that, I think that also solidifies this idea of CAV as a platform in which not only is using the space that is empty and showing that, but having a public program about that, hosting conversations and bringing different people that may be able to continue transforming what's going on specifically now with Michigan Avenue or with different parts of the city together in the same table. So I hope that that's also part of this, that we can have conversations with architects, with cultural activists, with politicians and think together about possible or different possibilities for what's going on with these spaces.
You know, typically over the years, the biennial has also had great speakers, mm-hmm. thinkers, who can kind of bring challenging discussions and put things on your mind. What might happen? Who might we see this year, if you can give us a little peek this time?
Well, we will have a lot of programming, and in this first programming week that is happening next week, we'll have particularly two panel discussions, well, more than two, but I want to point out two. One is related to Hispanic Heritage Month because, yeah, me being the first Latina artistic director and also the moment in history, so many architects from Latin America are going to be part of that panel. Some of them practice in the north and some in the south. Some of them kind of have this dual possibility of teaching and practicing in both. And that's happening on Saturday, the 20th at the Grand Foundation. We will also host a more general big panel that is related to shift, in which different capsules or themes related to shift that are going from material culture, as Mark was pointing out, that theme from Dakar, material culture or housing or things that have to relate to the vernacular or the ordinary or some magic in the city and the luxury of public spaces that we share. Luxury, I'm not saying because of expensive, but just the idea of sharing something that is public and common. So those themes are going to be represented in that panel. This first curatorial programming week is more related to opening all of the themes that we want to cover. And then in October, we are going to do a more Chicago-based programming to talk about different aspects of the city. For that, we are partnering with Brehouse and we are partnering with Mass Context that is hosting this exhibition called Common Chicago, representing closely to 30 local practices. Mm. So we want to discuss civic and public spaces in Chicago. And November is the turn for ecologies and the ideas like about the built environment, and ecology is again with an S, because it's not only about the traditional idea of nature, but thinking about all that really gets together in the built environment and that are really part of the fundamentals of the or the substance of space making.
I was going to say what's I think interesting about this year's biennial is in the past we generally had the big opening and it might have been focused on the cultural center or in the available city. It wasn't an indoor; it was outside. But what I think is quite interesting here is that Florence and her team have looked at it as sort of a rolling series of openings, so that you'll experience one part in at one date, and then it opens up to other things. And I think that's quite, it's no longer just the big opening and then it not goes away, mm-hmm. but it continues. I think the idea of it opening in multiple locations with multiple venues, with multiple programs is quite good. So it should be on the forefront of the cultural map and activities of this entire fall.
Mm. I want to ask a question that's going to get us in trouble, but I'm probably going to wait till the end. Dan, how much time do we got before?
You got about 10 minutes. You want to include a couple of questions?
All right. That gives me enough time to run to the door if I have to. You know, one of the things that we talked about in our kind of pre-call for this discussion is that we were talking about the idea of beauty in design and architecture. It led to an interesting talk about some of what's happening and coming out of the current Trump administration. And if you don't want to answer, I just say, Lee, be quiet. But this idea of kind of returning federal buildings, example, to a classical style. When the GSA, the Federal General Services Administration, over the past 50 years, did a fantastic job of opening up the ideals of architecture and openness in government buildings. When we're talking about the biennial and what's beautiful, you are purposely not trying to push a kind of
style.
I mean, mm-hmm. you're talk about what you're doing. Don't let me say what you're doing. Talk about what you're doing.
Yeah, today.
Well, I have to confess that we have done a fair amount of work for the U.S. State Department and for.
See, I was trying to keep you out of trouble, man.
I think the GSA and the notion that the solutions should come from the architectural world, not from the government to the architectural world, so that whether it's style or solution, again, always flows from the profession because the profession has this sort of pulse of what's going on, that when the government starts saying this is what they consider to be beautiful, I think that's a very slippery slope. Historically, it has not gone well for communities and nations that have had that mm-hmm. sort of edict. And I think Daniel Patrick Moynihan in 1962 really created what was called design excellence, in which the notion that the most talented and the most influential architects in the nation were going to do federal buildings. Now, when people agree or disagree with the building, but that's art, you know, that is basically the process. So we have deep concerns as both an office and a profession that the government is now, telling what style it should be. And it turns out that although classical might be appropriate for some, the idea that it's appropriate for everything, unfortunately, I think is just a completely missed understanding of what architecture is about.
Yeah, I'd like to touch on that as well, because for sure in the moments in history that classical architecture was there as a canonical thing, as a representation of something, it was related to that one idea of a canon dogma, right? If we think of the Renaissance or the Enlightenment, and we think of eclecticism at the beginning of the 20th century in the Americas, it wanted to represent one idea of the welfare state or one idea of society. And I think we are living through a moment that we value pluralism, diversity, and dispersion. And of course, it's so much difficult to understand how we build meaning and consensus from difference. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the challenge right now. So for sure, the idea of beauty is different for all. And I was reflecting on that this morning because, and we were joking a minute ago thinking about all the pink, mushy, millennial pink, mushy things, beautiful things that we have at the biennial. But for others, the idea of building bricks with mud is beautiful. The idea of a shared ritual in a table, right? So there are so many layers or dimensions to beauty that I think the openness to understand or to the challenge to understand that we can live without one canon and still make sense and approach something together. It's interesting for me, or what really drives me.
And in a democracy, very important ideal. You know, let me, before I open the floor up to questions, I guess, I'd like to, this is a thing that reporters always do to make up for what we don't know. We ask a question, but we dress it up so nicely, which is there anything that I didn't ask you that you want to say? Florencia.
Where you can look for the schedule of things and come visit us at the biennial. So in the website, there's the full list of activities, amazing programming, and I hope to see you around. And I'm happy that we are offering also some curatorial tours on the opening weekends. And I would be happy to share more about the specifics of many of the projects, the amazing projects of people that are coming.
Mark?
Yeah, I was going to say, give it a chance. It's not all completely understandable. There's nuance and complexity to what might be shown. But I also think one of the great things about the biennial is it actually shows how a city can provide delight. And we have that in spades with Millennium Park. Really, it's a park. Its use is gathering of people. So when you see people around the Bean or seeing a concert, or, you know, the kids drenched in Crown Fountain. Yeah. You know, when we talk about creating community and a safer city and a safer nation, that is a perfect example of how delight can really generate interest and community. And I think that goes back to I talked with Jack a little bit about this, about the history, you know, of how the biennial started. And it actually started back in 2012, I believe, with Rahm Emanuel's cultural plan. And the idea was that, you know, Chicago could be a supreme cultural destination.
Michelle, a second.
Not Rahm. I told you, Michelle. It's Michelle Boone who actually... sorry, Michelle, I warned you I would mess it up. But I think the idea that culture and business can coexist and actually reinforce each other is borne out for the last 150 years in the city of Chicago. Right. That people come here. I said to Jennifer the old statement: people don't go to Florence because the Medicis were good bankers. and I think the same thing. The when you have as a Chicagoan, I think we're always a little concerned that Chicago might be, you know, sort of attacked a little too much. But when you actually talk with people who come here, they love it. They can't believe the diversity. They can't believe the ability to get around and see just a whole group. And they can't believe, you know, the beauty of the city. And I think we do live. It's a complex city. It's got lots of problems with any city. But I think at the end of the day, it's got an essence that few cities in the world have. And I think that's what we're trying to capture.
So true. And it's beyond downtown. I mean, I live in Pullman, historic Pullman, and I've learned to pull my window shades in the front because there's always tourists out front, and I'm perpetually in some state of semi-dress. So I've learned, but here is, 115 blocks south of downtown, and there's an active,
Well, it's so authentic.
Yeah,
it is.
It's got that's where the history of the city is. Commerce and architecture, reinforce each other.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess, do you want to open the floor up to?
We do have a few minutes.
Okay.
If we have any questions, great.
All right.
And if you would just introduce yourself and your affiliation.
Hi, Alan Barker with Lamar Johnson Collaborative. You've talked about the public and cultural impact that the biennial has had, but now after 10 years, can you speak to the impact on the education, the education system or architectural education, but also the professional, the architecture profession? And then as an additional question, how can this biennial, it's every 2 years, how can it continue on for the next 2 years until the next?
Okay, well, I'll talk about the profession. I think the profession sometimes, not all, but sometimes wonders, like, how does it relate to my practice? And I've heard this from a number of architects. I mean, Chicago, from an architectural standpoint, is a very practical city. That's how stuff gets built. Mm-hmm. It's not just on paper and, super ideas. It actually does get built. So I would challenge all of us in our profession to look around for examples of how other people are solving it. Again, the mud bricks or what have you that might spur a notion of how we could build more sustainably. So I think that is, that's a big portion of it. And again, I think you have to like any abstract art installation, whatever, it takes a little bit of education and patience to sort of see it deeper, the deeper elements that are happening, with the actual, the individual exhibits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a very interesting question. And education has sometimes a longer development in time to change education in certain aspects compared to an exhibition that you work a year or two and it happens, and it's more about the moment and how those things can stay in time is different. And I really like that situation. Of course, I work in education, and many of the things that are discussed in SHIFT are inspired by discussions in architecture schools and what I have been listening in reviews in classes and inspired about maybe this need to understand how to relate the field, the discipline, let's say, like more insular parts of that with the real world and what's going on and how we need to react to that. So there is an inspiration in that. And I think thinking in the future of the biennial, there are so many things that we are trying to present that are reflecting on some ideas for the pavilion that was done, for instance, for the first biennial that has been there for a long period of time, the ultramodern, and there's another team thinking about the possible future for that pavilion, or other things that are thinking about specific moments or spaces in the city that I hope can continue during the 2 years in between biennials. I think that's the big challenge of all biennials, right? Because you have this fantastic celebration of the city, of architecture, of global communication, of the possibility to exchange ideas. And then in those other years of prep or also leaving what you have left behind in that biennial, you have to design how not to leave it behind and how to get that immersed in the fabric of Chicago. And I think that's happening more and more with CAB, and I hope this is the case in this one as well.
Excellent. I think we have a question
back
in the
here,
back.
Channeling my inner Phil Donahue.
Thank you so much. Well, thank you so much. It was such a fantastic discourse, and really excited about the programming. My name is Natalia Mudrak. I work at Aon, Insurance and Climate Change, unlikely audience, but new to Chicago. It's been 3 years that I lived in Chicago, and I have a question for you. You reflected a lot on the history of innovation architectural engineering innovation in Chicago. What are we pioneering today in Chicago? What is the most proud innovation, whether it's architectural engineering, environmental, that you think the world is looking to Chicago for inspiration today? Thank you.
I'll take a stab at that. The architectural profession in Chicago is amazingly robust. The reality is some of the most innovative work doesn't end up in Chicago. It's not built here. You know, again, I go back. Chicago is an incredibly practical town. That home insurance building, high-rise, wasn't built because man was reaching to the sky. It was totally economic, and that remains. However, when you look at the work of some firms, and you know, I'll just name three: Adrian Smith, Gordon Gill, SOM, and Studio Gang. They're doing work around the world. Some of the most innovative work with sustainability, with energy, with high rise, and with mixed use in ways that have never been done. So what happens is the world looks to Chicago architects as much as any place, you know, in the world for innovation. The concern we have as architects is it doesn't land here the way it landed when Bertram Goldberg did the Marina City. And so we're keep asking ourselves, why not? Why? I think it's become, you know, more predictable. It's a little bit safer. Back when Bertram Goldberg was doing Marina City, the city was dying. You know, people were fleeing, and that sort of crisis formed a incredible birth of innovation and risk-taking. And so that's what we look forward to, that some of that risk-taking come back to Chicago, that it's not just the same old, same old.
Yeah, and if I can add something very small, maybe I think we have to shift our mindset and sometimes understand right now that in the present, innovation doesn't necessarily look glossy or like full of new technologies. And I think Chicago brings or has a lot of experience in community engagement and in different kind of small nonprofits that are working in different places in the city. And I think that's a way of innovating that maybe we can communicate to other places as well.
I think we have another minute or so left. Dan, is there any?
Can make this quick?
Oh, thank you. Hi, Jackie Williams with the School of the Art Institute, Chicago. This sounds like a great program for high school students to also get an entry into architecture and the whole science involving that. Is there a space or a place for students, Chicago students, to get involved as we kind of bridge that big gap between mm-hmm. Chicago's great architecture and sharing that knowledge?
Yeah, there will be for sure education programs, but there has been a lot of mindful thinking in the exhibition for it to be very easily kind of absorbed by students. And there is, for instance, an example on this capsule that is called Inhabit at Habit about housing that represents 29 projects of collective housing in different parts of the world. It has short videos, booklets, and you can go. We really thought, and Igor Commerzbender here, associate curator of the Biennial, has worked very closely with me in that one, and students being there for an afternoon, just learning about how people can live in different places and the themes that make housing. That's one example. But for sure, all the exhibition has these layers that are really approachable, both for young kids, high school students, and for the general audience to really engage with architecture, because one of the main things here is to understand that architecture is for everyone.
All right. Well, I guess that brings us to the time. A big hand to my new friend Florencia Rodriguez, old friend Mark Sexton. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and thank you, Lee Bay. That was a great, great conversation. Thanks to all three of you for sharing that, and Lee for guiding us along the way. Great conversation, all. So much more to come that we look forward to joining you, and hope that you'll all join us back here at City Club. We have quite a month. Closing the Housing Gap in Chicago is September 22nd. Cook County Sheriff Tom Dart is September 23rd. Commissioner of Water Management, September 30th. All three of those are sold out. All four of these are sold. Advance Illinois State Report on Public Education is sold out. Mismeasuring Impact in the Nonprofit Sector, October 15th. And then, of course, Ambassador Rahm Emanuel, October 23rd, who we've mentioned today. Good news is for 90% of those programs that are sold out, we do hold tickets for civic level members and members that that are part of our City Club family. So please become members, up your membership, come back and join us. You're welcome anytime. Thank you again for your insights, and hope you all have a great day.
Thank you.